It's Illume Group's Andrea Lay, Packed View's Melissa Burdick, the Wizard of Wooden Hill Shri, and I'm PVSB from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 22nd, and of course it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We found them boundlessly intriguing. We hope you do too. Brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com. It's retail right now. Leading off, Shri.
Thank you, Peter. And Amazon Live introduces a new shoppable ad-supported channel to Prime Video called Freevee, featuring 24/7 interactive content from celebrities and brands, leveraging its Shop the Show technology to enhance viewer engagement and boost its advertising revenue. At least that's the plan. The channel leverages Amazon's Shop the Show technology to enable viewers to easily purchase content seen on the TV screen via a mobile device. The CPG guys and I are excited to try this out, and we will report back how it performs back here in one of our blogs on the CPG guys. So I look forward to that. Over to you, Peter, for what's going on with Walmart Marketplace.
Thanks, Shri. Walmart Marketplace opens Omni service to auto sellers. Walmart is enabling customers to order eligible tires from Walmart sellers and have them shipped to a local Walmart store for easy installation at their auto care centers. Walmart sellers have added 12,000 unique items, including specialty tires, to provide nearly 40,000 marketplace offers that are installation eligible at 2,300 auto care centers around the country. The expanded tire selection complements Walmart's existing auto services that include accessories and battery services, while giving sellers more access to Walmart's omnichannel customer base. Over to you, Andrea.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Amazon begins offering Dash Carts to other grocers. Amazon has begun offering its Dash Carts to third-party grocers, expanding the checkout technology beyond Amazon grocery banners and Whole Foods market stores, according to a blog post from the company. Amazon introduces Dash Carts to non-Amazon grocery stores, starting with select locations in the Kansas City area. This rollout comes shortly after Amazon ceased its Just Walk Out technology in Amazon Fresh and Whole Foods. Customers using Dash Carts tend to spend 10% more, with over 80% of the transactions from repeat users, highlighting the cart's convenience and efficiency. Over to you, Melissa.
So Heinz has launched a new limited edition barbecue sauce. Heinz and Barbie lovers in Europe are in luck. A limited edition pink vegan mayo with barbecue sauce was launched to celebrate Barbie's 65th anniversary. Mattel and Heinz have unveiled the new Heinz Classic barbecue sauce. It will be available in the UK and Spain initially, and may be available elsewhere in the future. Additionally, there's 5,000 bottles of the new sauce available to purchase online, but they can only be shipped to the UK and Ireland. So for those of you in the US who are curious, you can do what I do and go to TikTok and search pink barbecue sauce, and you will find it.
Thank you, Melissa. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded. Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our hosts, Shri Rajagopalan, Peter V.S. Bond, and Brian Gildenberg, explore how brands and retailers engage consumers in an increasingly digitally driven world. And now, here are the CPG Guys. Hello and welcome to the CPG Guys podcast. I'm PVSB, one of the aforementioned CPG Guys, and this episode is being recorded in sunny Miami, Florida, where the fabulous WPP Commerce three-day event just concluded. Yours truly, along with Brian Gildenberg, had the pleasure of speaking on stage this very morning as part of a panel discussion on, of all things, retail media. I know you're shocked. Brian had to head back to New Jersey. He's hosting an event across from Manhattan tomorrow, but I'm still here in Florida. My colleague Shri is probably at about 30,000 feet doing Lord knows what, traveling from place to place. So I'll be hosting alone today, but I have good company to help me keep you all educated and entertained. Since most of the people listening to this episode were likely not in attendance at the event, we thought it would be terrific to recap what transpired here over the last few days and thereby create a collective sense of FOMO amongst all of you. Here to help me with the commentary are two senior leaders from the broader WPP organization. First, we have Beth Ann Kamenko, the global CEO of VML Y&R Commerce and master of ceremonies for WPP stream and commerce events since 2019. I'm also joined by Ji Kim, president of Group M Nexus, which represents all things Group M performance at the WPP Commerce event this week. Bethann Ji, welcome to the CPG Guys podcast. How are you doing?
Great. Now.
Yeah, feeling better now. Yeah. Well, having it behind us.
Exactly. It's nice when it's in the past now. You can
past in a good way.
Libation, relax, and think about everything that transpired. So we're going to pick your brains about what you saw, what you heard, and it will be a tremendous experience. Before we get to the recap analysis, which we're going to do today, it would be great if, I'll start with Bethann, would you please share with us a little bit about VML, Y&R, Commerce, and exactly what it is you do with the organization?
Well, I'll start with the broader VML Y&R, and I know it's a mouthful, especially when you add commerce onto it. we build connected brands with our clients, and that really represents the full spectrum of brand experience, consumer experience, all the way through to commerce. And we see them not as separate functions or capabilities, but as really truly integrated, blended ways of building brands that are going to be relevant to consumers today. Commerce is very important to that, obviously, and we think of every moment as a potential moment to build both brand love at the same time that you're building the desire to convert and transact, and that moment of transaction should be infused and informed by the brand and brand love. So that's really kind of the simple story. And my role is global CEO of our commerce capability and business and brand, which is all around the world. So it's pretty cool that we have such an enormous scaled commerce capability. It's pretty unique in the industry. And I also get the great pleasure of leading our New York office of VML Y&R, which is about 1,200 people and represents every aspect of our full VML Y&R offer.
Thank you for that, Rika. That's terrific. She, tell us about Group M Nexus.
Sure, thank you. Group M Nexus was actually publicly born last summer, and it is the integration of all our biddable practitioners and products under one roof. So we took a lot of disparate but fast-moving capabilities and merged them under one performance mission, and I have the pleasure of leading them in the U.S. and Canada.
That is terrific. And as both an American and a Canadian citizen,
I appreciate that.
It took me about 2 weeks in boarding school here in the U.S. and the incessant teasing to dispense with my Canadian accent. But when I go home and visit my family, it all comes back. So I can aid with the best of them. But then again, all right, thank you both for that feedback. What I'm going to do in the digital items of this podcast, for everyone who's listening on a mobile device, 90%+ of you are, just switch over to the liner notes or hyperlinks. You don't have to write any of this down. It's all there. I'm going to have Bethann's LinkedIn profile, G's LinkedIn profile, the LinkedIn pages for both their companies, and for their corporate website. So that'll make it very easy for everybody to get to it. All right. So why don't we get to the questions? I prepared a bunch because it's been a really active couple of days between just me preparing for being on stage, but also trying to immerse myself in all of this change that's going on. This has been very mind-blowing for me, meeting so many people and listening to what people are doing. I always say that nobody learns more from this podcast than I do. I learned so much this event.
So oh, good.
So let me start off with that. Since you've been serving as MC at WPP Commerce since 2019, why don't you go back to what was the concept, the origin behind WPP Commerce, and where are you taking it now? What is the purpose of this, and who are the archetypes of people that you see coming from both a company and a role and responsibility perspective?
Well, it was born from another event name to become WPP Commerce. WPP has a number of events called stream events throughout the world. So we did a streamification a bit without having it be a stream because it's very specific to the topic of commerce. And we wanted it to be like meaty content, not that stream doesn't give you that. But we wanted it to be really subject matter experts on stage. And we wanted to make sure that it was very attractive to our partners that are mostly in the tech space, as well as our great client partners that are there across every single sector. And then, of course, all of our great colleagues. We wanted it to be a real mashup experience of all their different voices and all the change to your point and the stories that they have to tell that are going on in their worlds. But again, with that lens of commerce. And so I think what we've seen in terms of the evolution, of course, this year we talked about the revolution, but what we've seen through the years with the conference is it's moved from being, in some ways, we had a lot of almost sales-oriented people at the conference to much more about a marketing, a C-suite level marketer in the room. And it's really evolved from a conversation that was really still about how do you transact, where do you transact, making sure that that happened frictionless and seamless digitally and physically, to one that's really now about this whole explosion of creativity, about new tools, about retail media, and the functionality that's coming in through that, and why that's actually creating a lot of the upending of marketing as we knew it, and sort of the media funnel disruption that we're seeing. So it's driving this incredible balance of conversation, which is still about like getting really nerdy and geeky for those of us that love that tech and data side of commerce, but that then also about the exactly. And me too. I have that in me too. But there you go. But also the creativity that it opens up right now, and the opportunity from that creativity and new functionality and utility.
Well, from my perspective, I can say that looking at the people that showed up, first I saw blue chip brands, blue chip retailers, ecosystem players, and not just the companies represented, but the level of people was top notch. You brought together veritable and clearly definable thought leaders in this space. So kudos for bringing everybody together. I think that's
thank you for them attending.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Yes. You never know. You set up the party, you invite them, but you never know who's going to show.
Well,
Miami doesn't hurt.
No, Miami's definitely a good venue. I'll say from the standpoint of the CPG guys, we're very honored to be able to speak to such a tremendous audience on stage. All right, Gene, let me turn to you. In talking to people before the event or towards the beginning of the event, what did you hear were some of the topics that were of most importance to them to explore during these sessions and even conversations? Because I think a lot of it is not just the presentations, it's what happens as you walk out of the room and you're on break, as you're at dinner, as you're, what was the buzz?
So I love what Beth Ann said about the evolution of the event itself. I think it was really interesting to see our media clients being exposed to people involved in the space that are coming at it in completely different angles. Mm-hmm. So they're seeing a lot of opportunities that they hadn't thought of before, things that they should consider to really do well in the space. And a lot of, honestly, partners that they don't necessarily get to meet day to day. So without an event like this, I don't think that the opportunity is really, is still out there. So I think that's, hopefully we'll get to do more of these and bring even more diverse sets of partners. I love kind of the way the agenda was set up, so that you could drill into the really nerdy stuff, but then pull out to look at the macro direction of marketing, media, and just digital. So that's what I think, at least our clients really enjoyed that experience.
I'm like you. I'm a data geek. I love crunching the numbers. My background, I think if you did a 23andMe test on me, you would probably find that there's some DNA strands of Edwina Dunn and Clive Humby, the legendary founders of Dunn Humby and the precursors to 8451, who were here in representation. So I totally appreciated that, but I also love being able to talk about how that applies to the broader strategic initiative. So I think what I was expecting, the experience delivered more. It exceeded my expectation. From what I understand by other people, it was the same for them as well. So that's really tremendous. So Beth Ann, let's dig into the event. Without rattling through every person who was on stage, and with the exception of when the CPG guys were on stage, we'd love to hear from you what you consider to be some of the more thought-provoking speakers or statements or topics that really resonated as you were there in the front row watching this all go down.
Well, I would take up way too much time to really drain it all or go through it all, but I will highlight just three and three statements with the three. Because it's helpful for everyone who wasn't even in the audience just to hear kind of the output. And again, it was part of the design thinking that we had of the conference itself. And the CPG guys, to your point, are also a draw and a highlight. But we thought, let's really go big this year and bring in some real keynoters, people that people don't oftentimes get to not just hear from, because sometimes with the podcast, we do hear from all these great people, but we don't necessarily in an intimate setting get to really feel like they're talking to us. Yeah. So the two people we brought in at that level were Mark Cuban and Scott Galloway, and also purposely kind of sequenced it the way we did. So I had the great privilege of interviewing Mark Cuban, which was incredible. I've known him throughout my career. He was one of my very first clients actually at broadcast.com. So, and then to hear him, of course, with all the success he's got behind him now. But, you know, sometimes you think to yourself, can an entrepreneur tell us something in the audience, since we're all working for big organizations for the most part, that is going to still be actionable by us? But he did. He delivered. We pushed him there a little bit in terms of think entrepreneurially and think about the, you know, bigger companies that you work with. And he shared this idea of violent transparency, which, you know, it's just pushing that language of transparency even further. And I really love that, of like all of us have to push further and harder, especially with everything that's changing so quickly, to hold ourselves accountable to different standards for our consumers, for the way we operate, the way we do things. And I think it kind of just like is overarching to, you know, so many different thematics that played out through the whole conference. That coupled with Scott Galloway, who is violently transparent anyway, but to kind of get to the raw candor that he brings to the conversation. And I think like his knowledge, you may not agree or disagree with him on different topics, but the fact that he's drawing from the data and he's visualizing it the way he does with his metaphors and analogies, and just this brilliant thinking that he brings to the topics, but also a call to action for our industry and our organizations too. As we are looking for commerce and commercial growth and some capitalism there, to not lose sight of our, you know, responsibility to the future generations, to mental well-being, to humanity, and not just to sort of sell out at all costs, and to be really clear about that. So I think everyone appreciated that. And then, of course, the phenomenal Aura James, you know, I don't know if you don't know the name, if you're hearing this and you know the other two, you absolutely must know her name too. Her 15% pledge that she's working with the retail industry. I mean, put it on a notepad, you know, during sort of a lot of crisis that we were going through in this country in particular. And overnight really made it a reality, where she's working with Sephora and Ulta and major retailers now to make sure that 15% of the brands that they have on shelf online and offline are representative of a diversity, and, you know, Black-owned businesses is like the most powerful call to action. And one of the pieces of language that she used was, you know, so much of what we've done before has been performative, like this optical allyship, I think is the language she used. And I think the call to action for all of us to say, no matter what industry we're in, are we really not just hiring in diverse ways, but making sure that from a commercial lens and standpoint, we're putting money back into communities that are reflective too of the populations that we're serving. And just the way she said it and what she represents, I think we're going to be seeing way more of her. And it was an honor to have her here.
Well, as someone who is married to a person of color and has a child who is a person of color, I think that is a very laudable objective. You know, we're very mission-driven at the CPG guys. And are involved with Next Up, and that is just another element of making sure you're giving back and you're creating opportunities for the future. So I think that's absolutely great. Thank you for those points. They were really great. Gee, I want to turn to you, because something's been kind of chewing it up in my head, and it all centers around the second part of the name of this event, WPP Commerce. So what are your thoughts on how people in the industry are using the term commerce? Because I think this is squarely in your area of responsibility. Is it too broad? Is it too narrow? What do you think about commerce, and how would you define it?
Well, let's look at this room as an example, right? We're sitting with Beth Ann, who represents the experience side of commerce. And on the Group M side, not just Nexus, you look at the Group M, the media side of commerce, right? We represent, collectively, tens of thousands of practitioners involved in managing quote-unquote commerce. I think it's a label that we designated to make it feel simple for the industry and for clients. It reminds me a little bit of how mobile got started, which is where my career started. Okay. Remember when we designated things, this bucket of money, as mobile, but there's no such thing. It breaks out into 30 different things that you must orchestrate correctly to create one fantastic result for a client. So where we are right now, and I'm speaking specifically from a North America lens, you look at just the dollars, the media dollars flowing into quote-unquote commerce, this is big girl money. It's bigger than linear TV, right? So, and it's the convergence of three things that make it so big. There's retail. We already touched on shopper and the retail experience that's now being digitized and converted into media inventory. Then you have search, which, unlike the granddaddy that is Google or traditional search, is multiple platforms that enable search-like placements and experiences. Okay. And then you have programmatic, right? Yeah. You have display. Those three worlds are converging, and here comes social. That's right on the horizon. So when those things come together, just think about it. This is a massive and fast moving object, but all the little overlaps and the distinct capabilities that they represent take a lot of more infrastructure, a lot of talent, a lot of expertise to manage correctly. It's incredibly complicated. So I think we have to try to resist calling it retail media or commerce as if it was one thing that we were managing for a client. We already talk about it as if it was one channel. That drives me insane, right?
Bethan, I want to talk about going back to retail, the storefront. Because for all the talk we have and the excitement about off-site, on-site, and all these digital capabilities, the fact of the matter is where most commerce is conducted is in physical retail. So to that end, what did you learn about the digitization that is occurring at retail, and what does that mean for retail media opportunities to create meaningful experiences?
Well, I'll also flash back to a role I had before coming to WPP. I was the chief marketing officer of Westfield. Okay. And we started Westfield Labs at that time. And we were really thinking about, okay, how do we enable the digitization of retail? And I remember one of the big challenges that we faced was, is this going to be an attractive place for teenagers to shop? Because, the mall, right, was known as the place where teenagers spent their social time. And that was their social commerce. And there was a lot of concern that that was dying. It wasn't going to continue. And I think we're beginning to see, especially even aided by an acceleration of the pandemic, a return by teenagers to physical retail. And whether that is a Sephora or an Ulta, whether that is a mall development, if you're in California in particular, that's where that continues to happen. In London, that happens. Some places, it's high streets. But I think we're seeing a new generation that hasn't gone through all the cycles of change that we have that are just coming in saying, where do I want to interact and transact and engage? And it is oftentimes still the physical retail environment. So you still have multiple generations, but still skewing younger, that are going to discover all of the benefits that come from physical retail. And that can be from grocery all the way through to kind of their favorite apparel or accessory or beauty shop. And I think it is the thinking about the totality of experience. Now, we've said this for a long time, like it was going to be about omni, but I think it is about that ability to recognize people's lives as being seamlessly connected to your mobile device, to other screens, and to the physical world. And
when
so
you use your mobile device, you're not just using it to do an e-commerce transaction. You walk into every physical store with it, don't you?
Totally. And then how often are you taking pictures of things, then, comparing sometimes, wanting to find it in the right size? There's just so many, or sending it to your sister to say, should I get this one or this one? Like and because you can now, you do. And so I think what I saw from Barrows and in that conversation with ShopRite was, I do remember people pitching me on screen to help them sell screens to retailers that we were working with going back like 10 years ago. And it was like laughable. Yep. I was like, well, good vision, good idea, but definitely ahead of its time. The tech isn't there yet. The bandwidth bandwidth isn't there yet. There, you know, and what's the point of like a, just a digital screen in store? But now the ability to have that be a dimensionalized experience, to have it be connected to mobile and to an internet, to be able to be more relevant in the moment in terms of the content that you're putting there, to start personalizing that content, to have data linked to that content. You know, it's just sort of endless what you can do, but that's because everything foundationally is in place that allows it to be a dimensional platform versus just something that's just hanging there on a fixture that's creating, you know, a little bit maybe prettier and cap displays.
I think we have to look across the entire omnichannel ecosystem and find the components that drive the most meaningful experience. So when I think about physical retail, I can pick up the product, I can see how big it is relatively, I can hold it.
I can smell it.
I can smell it. What's the texture like? In digital retail, what I love is I can get enough content to educate me about whether this is a judicious purchase decision. So what I love is what John Chowdhury from Wakefern said about building those screens in store and bringing that content, talking about the ability, like nothing drives bigger conversion, particularly for retailers, their own store brands, more than ratings and reviews, because it gets over the quality and the trust issue on the product. So I can see why there's a lot of value to them.
And what Behrs has now built with the merchandising ability that you have there, I think is a part of the equation that was just really missing before.
Yeah. And then I think about the other end of the spectrum. What is Ulta doing? They want to bring all that content into the physical store. So what are they doing? They're finding ways to, as frictionless as possible, bring the ability as you're walking through the store to just wave your mobile device overnight, and up pops all the content that is meaningful, that will actually help you in a physical store learn more about that product. Because I can hold a product, but I don't know if it's hypoallergenic. I can sit there and read all the fine print on the box, but sometimes I want to get that from my device, which is a very fluid and up-to-date way to communicate that messaging. So I think what Barrow's demonstrated and what they're doing in retail is going to be incredibly powerful, because as we said, 90% of sales are still occurring in physical retail. All right. Brands are deep into digital transformation right now. As they embrace the change, there are a lot of other objectives that start getting folded into that I think will make for better digital change. So I firmly believe that having a diverse workforce, so issues around DEI, brings to bear other types of experiences, other types of thought leadership, and that just yields a much better output. I think we hear that clearly from Diane Hosling and the team at Kobe and Palmolive. What are your thoughts around this?
Yeah, and I love that Beth Ann highlighted that in this event. It's a really interesting trend that was happening to really highlight what has been going on with not underserved, but like largely ignored communities in the past. And one of the things that I love about GroupM, and one of the reasons I came here, is there's two parts of our mission statement. The one that's better known is make advertising better for people. The part that's lesser known is shaping the next era of media. So those two things go together, shaping the next era of media to make advertising better for people, right? And what we kind of mean with that is, you talked about violent transformation. There are some decisions that we make as marketers and as contributors to this ecosystem, where you have to choose whether you are going to be completely maniacally focused on an outcome-based mission, or you are going to take a step back and take some other elements into consideration, right? That's kind of the genesis of what we talk about internally. When we talk about diverse audiences and representation, I think there's two parts. There's one part which is really, really simple. Traditionally, because we've always pointed our attention to a quote-unquote mass segment, I'm using air quotes a lot today, commerce and mass segments, there's a simple truth that there, if we were to include what is a true representation of our consumer base, we probably will get better results, yeah. Right? These are folks that have not been typically exposed to a lot of advertising. They're not being specifically targeted. So there's one part of the equation. The second part of the equation is common sense, and we feel a lot of responsibility to actually prove it out in numbers, which is my favorite topic. It's that when you are act and behave out in the market as an inclusive brand and marketer, you will, your customer base will feel resonance to that, which becomes a differentiation for your brand, which theoretically should lead to brand love, right? This is just logical, but I think it took some, I want to say, sharp moments in our culture to make it a real initiative at scale. So there's always been initiatives, there's always been advocates of, but now we're seeing a movement truly at scale.
Just to add to that, I really quickly, I find that sometimes what pushback we're getting from clients now is like, well, it's no longer going to differentiate us. Like, it's not going to be differentiated. And it's like, the purpose isn't to be differentiated through that method and through the importance of that. It is actually to allow yourself to still be relevant,
exactly,
and meaningful, exactly, to your point before too, uh-huh, to, yeah, exactly, yeah, to the work.
I mean, we have clients that are talking about it now because there's a generational change coming. We live in a market that is going to fundamentally look different than when we were teenagers in America, right? The face of advertising, the kind of the way the brands marketed to their consumers, their perceptions of who we are might have been, you know, acceptable a few generations ago, but we are Miami. Let's take a look around. Mm-hmm. The world looks completely different.
Yeah, absolutely. I think about companies like Unilever that have made a tremendous transition from some older products from eras gone by to now embracing concepts like the Crown Act, which are about letting people wear their hair the way they want to wear their hair and do so without any fear of repercussion in the workplace. And I was at an event in January when someone at Unilever came forward and just talked about that inspired her, mm-hmm, to just live an authentic life, mm-hmm, in her daily work. So there's a lot of great inspiration that's coming out of that, and I think it's tremendous. It was really great to hear Kobe and Palmolive talk about how that's infusing into their transformation activity. All right, so we're gonna close this out. Here's what I'd love to know. Are there any particular trends that after being at this event, the last couple of days, that you're going to be paying particular attention to as you head back out into the
I'll call out two things. I mean, that we've talked a lot about some of the obvious ones like retail media spend and also the return of reimagining physical retail. But the two that I want to call out, one is like an actual tangible trend that I think is still being underestimated. And, you know, you mentioned it from a media context as well, and we heard a lot about, which is social commerce.
Yeah.
And I think it's still misunderstood. I think it's not or ill-defined. But I think the opportunity out there for, in the right way, native to the right social platforms, the use of a social engagement again through, and that is omni, could be digital and physical being fused together as well, but has that digital component on the platforms. I think social commerce is yet to be figured out, yet to be seen used, even to some degree in China, because I don't think we're going to see in other parts of the world a copy of China. I think it's going to end up being different by different localities. Yeah. But I think what's going to happen certainly here in the United States, I think we've been seeing that already in the UK and other large markets in social commerce, is going to be really exciting and one to watch. And I'm sure we're going to have some great stories of that next year. And then the other one is much more about how than it is the what. And it was, the word was collaboration. Like, it came up on almost every single panel. And I love that we're not necessarily talking about integration. We're talking about collaboration, which means we respect the differences that media, experience, creativity, content creation, all these different capabilities bring to the table, but we need to find more purposeful ways to come together to collaborate. And it was like, it's not necessarily about structure, actually. I think you guys said that on your panel too. Yeah. It's actually about workflow.
Yeah.
And so to me, that idea of collaboration is that bigness kind of built inside of it.
Integration to me has a connotation of ownership, whereas collaboration respects that we each have our own assets,
yeah,
but together we can make more for both of us, and that's a better
it's definitely my word of 2023 now.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. Yeah.
I agree with the collaboration point. I was talking to a client recently about commerce and some of the how to kind of transform. You use the word digital transformation. How do you use kind of this trend to transform her organization or transform us in general? And I remember thinking about this, and to get to transformation, we have to be uncomfortable, right? Nobody gets to a transformative place by being like okay with things, because change inherently makes us uncomfortable.
Yeah,
so I think collaboration is absolutely the right word. Some things we talked about, like the physical kind of experience versus the digitization, some things will break, some things will be reborn, some things will melt, right? I think that's what we're watching right now. We talked about colliding worlds, agree with what Bethann said about social commerce. That is going to be a beast that takes a few different forms. It's going to be a fight because brands want to own the experience. Physical kind of spaces want to own an experience, and now platforms want to own an experience, right? So it's going to be a fight. But with that comes great innovation, and with that comes completely new territories. So I think we'll see that with video entering commerce.
Yeah.
We'll see that with more kind of physical footprint kind of the digitization of like physical spaces. So that's what I think is going to be the most exciting.
Well, thank you both for taking time out of the end of the event to sit down with
Thank me. You for inviting us.
Yeah, this was great.
It was really exciting. Can't wait for the next WPP Commerce to occur and for us to check in on all that has transpired and changed over time. To our audience, I want to thank you for joining us on this episode of the CPG Guys podcast. And we look forward to speaking with you on the very next episode. Thanks, and have a great day.
The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.